You're listening to Boston Strongcast, a place where we talk all things powerlifting, strength, and the occasional scientific nerd session. I'm your host, Kevin Kahn, the owner of Precision Powerlifting Systems, strength coach and competitive powerlifter in the USAPL. Thanks for tuning in, and let's get stronger together. Hey guys, this is Kevin Kahn with Boston Strongcast. Today I'm going to do a little solo act on a different thought process that I've come across with myself in training, basically over the last maybe, 6 months or so. Like since right before Nationals, I was starting to kind of get some thoughts on where I wanted to take training from a programming standpoint and from a coaching standpoint. I was starting to have more questions than I was having answers. A lot of this kind of stemmed from, you know, I've only been coaching powerlifting for a little over 3.5 years, and a part of the problem, I think, was, you know, when you get newer people, they tend to have success right off the bat. And we kind of talked about this in a previous episode when Mike Teixeira was on about the novelty of a program. You know, he was saying even back in the day, somebody would run a West Side template. When that stopped working, they'd run a Chico template. When that stopped working, they'd run and do something else. And I've kind of witnessed similar things in my coaching career, I guess, up to this point, where people might come from somebody else's program, and then the novelty of my program tends to yield some pretty good results right off the bat. And it's probably happened in the other direction too. Some people who have left me as a coach went to a new coach, and I'm sure that they've had success for similar reasons. The good thing is that I've had a core group of lifters now for an extended period of time. So with that extended period of time, it's allowed me to kind of evaluate my program on more of a long-term scale. And, you know, it's brought to light that some of the things that I think we think are true just tend to not really hold up when you start to put everything together. And I started to collect some of these thoughts a little bit before Nationals. You know, and a lot of this does have to stem from Kerry's deadlift not moving. So in the 2 years she's been with me, might be a little over 2 years now, she's only put like 2.5 kilograms on her best deadlift. You know, and if you think of it, that strength might have just been there before and we hit it right on a given day, you know. You know, with that said, she's put a ton on her squat, a lot on her bench, and, you know, she's been able to climb the rankings a little bit up until that top 10 total at Nationals this year, which is great. However, the deadlift not moving is definitely a major concern. And over this period of time, I've thrown volume at it. I've dropped volume and thrown intensity. I've done nothing but comp lifts. We did a lot of variations. We tried to work on technique first. You name it, we've basically tried it. And thinking about that actually kind of got me thinking about, you know, some other things. You know, as we went into Nationals, so Dave, in the middle of a block before Nationals, had hit like a 655-pound squat. He had pulled 700 for a single on the deadlift. I don't really remember what, without having to go back and look, I don't really remember what his benches were at the time. But when we got to Nationals, none of those numbers were there. And granted, there were certain variables, you know, like a weight cut and all of that. But this also got me thinking a little bit more about what we actually really know about training and the stress of training. One of the, I think, articles that really got me thinking, Mike Amato had shared it with me. It's been a while now. I think back when we had kind of first met, so a couple years ago, maybe a year and a half ago. And this article by John Kiley was kind of breaking down the problems that we see with modern periodization models. I've talked about this in the past, and it makes a lot of sense to me, but my ability to practically apply it and actually like think about it and how I could structure training, I think needed some more understandful, needed some more like understanding there. So basically what his article says is that our old school periodization models are kind of built around old research with mechanical stress. So basically you give a lifter enough volume, enough intensity, you build that up over a few weeks, you deload, and then they come back stronger. So you overload the lifter, you build up some fatigue, you deload, you let that fatigue dissipate, and you see this super compensation thing happen. The problem with this is just, it's not what we actually see. So in Dave's case, he hit those big numbers in the middle of a block when variations were still high, volume was pretty high, we were pushing training. And then somehow at Nationals, where we tapered, so fatigue was lower, it's the same tapering strategies that we've used in the past that he's done extremely well with. And those numbers just weren't, he had a big squat PR, but he still didn't hit his best. And those other, the deadlift wasn't even close. So like those numbers just weren't there. So that's not exactly what we had seen from that. And so basically, you know, you read more of John Kiley's article and you start to, there start to be some connections I can draw with, you know, pain science research, for example. So talking about emotions, perceptions, beliefs, the lifter's cognition, all playing a role in those physiological adaptations. So how a lifter feels is actually part of that physiological strength. Now, this was a concept that made sense to me because same person, Mike Amato, had shared quite a bit of current pain science research with me that stated similar things. And, you know, you tie it to your own experiences, I guess, and you start to think about like those times when training was well, like your confidence was high, like there were a number of positive factors that I think that, you know, were leading to that. So, you know, I've been talking about this stuff for a while, but like I was saying, I don't think I've really known how to practically apply it for a period of time now. So I started to think, like, what do we really know about training volume? And we know that volume is important, but it's impossible to know how much is actually optimal for a given person. You know, I think we know that we can't just come into the gym and do one squat once a week and expect to be a world champion. You know, and I think, you know, within reason, if we think about it, like, most programs, that's, you know, they squat twice a week or more. Like, there's results in all of them, depending on the person. So, you know, frequency matters, but to what extent? We know we can't just squat once a month. Like, how often does that, do we really need to lift? I think each lift is different in this, and it gets a little bit more complex when we start looking at stuff like that. So, you know, I started to think about that, and like, I decided to say, fuck it, let's squat 3 days a week and let's see how that changes things. And it did. We saw some really good progress from squatting 3 days a week. At the same time, I dropped deadlifts to 1 day and bench to 2 days. So in this scenario here, some people, their deadlift did well in this scenario. Others felt too tired after squats. Bench, the same thing. Some felt great. Some felt like they needed more. And, you know, I think there's some benefits, you know, to an off-season program doing some deconditioning anyways, kind of getting back to the novelty of the program thing that I was talking about a little bit at the beginning. So, you know, over this time, we saw some great squat progress. But we've always seen good squat progress, so it was hard to say it was any better going 3 days than it was two. But one of the other things I started to like really think about was how can we track all of these things? So another, you know, I think volume's important to build resiliency in a lifter. You know, I think we know that tendons and muscles respond to load and that there needs to be a baseline met in order to make sure the chronic workloads are high enough to prepare that lifter to train harder, you know, as a competition comes closer. Or, you know, I've started to be a little bit less structured, I think, in those things. I think I now, when I catch a lifter in a wave, I'm going to push it as hard as possible. And then, you know, if that wave drops down, we'll try to change it up and push it again or maintain strength. Like, I think we'll take what's there when it's there and make the best decisions as a competition draws closer. But I use the acute chronic work ratio to measure these loads. So, you know, what their average is over a month compared to what I'm asking them to do per week and making sure that those baselines at least get met. Because I believe that the research, I know that there's research on both sides that kind of go against each other, but I do believe that there's some benefit to building up those workloads to making a more resilient lifter. So as of now, I'm going to keep them as they are. And so then I'm trying to think of how I can track everything else. How can we track fatigue? I mean, if you go back when I had first started, I tried to calculate fatigue points based off of RPEs of each set. It was too subjective and never really worked out well that way. The acute chronic work ratio I thought could kind of do the same thing, but it's more of just a volume monitoring tool that's still extremely individualized. I was kind of stuck on like how do we know if someone's making progress in the program and when we might need to change things and like, you know, all those questions that I think a coach and a lifter typically have arise. So I was kind of, you know, in the beginning, I was always, you know, follow the program, just run the numbers, because if I could calculate the volumes, I could push the volumes later on. And, you know, I'm applying the overload principle. I have to be on the right track. This has to work. But the thing is it works sometimes, it doesn't work other times. And even for the same person, it works sometimes and it doesn't work other times. And like, I'm not so sure. And, you know, Mike had brought up this point, Mike DeShera on the podcast, of how important total tonnage actually is. And I'm honestly not too sure at this current point in time. I just kind of use it as a monitoring tool to make sure we're getting enough. And it's more for the resiliency of the athlete than it is anything else. At this point. So then I started to think, how can I monitor an athlete's progress? And the only thing I could think of was performance, right? I mean, that's how we measure this sport anyways, is when somebody goes to a meet, how well they perform. But chances are most people aren't competing more than 2 to 3 times a year. So we really don't have a lot of those performance measures across the board to help dictate training. You know, you can throw in tests and stuff, but even then, how often are you really going to test your lifts? You know, and like the way that we were testing previously is we'd have a light week, test week, light week, and then we'd taper down to a meet. You know, we're hitting openers and stuff like that along the way. So I think that got me thinking, you know, and then, you know, I started to think, all right, so what if I want to lift heavy more often? So, you know, I was thinking we were lifting heavy pretty frequently and I was starting to get better results when I was doing that. So in the beginning, it was just run the numbers. Then after that, it's like I started introducing these intensity intervals, which based off of rep scheme, the lifters get some leeway up or down to go. The problem with this is I was using those intensity intervals based off of acute chronic work ratio. So I was allowing the data to dictate what the weight was going to be on the bar. And I think this was a mistake, but we were seeing better results from having them push it so that the last set would be somewhere between an 8 and a last set RPE somewhere between an 8 and a 9 was ideally what we were looking for. And then I started to think, Well, what if I drop the intensity intervals? I use the acute chronic work ratio as nothing more than a monitoring tool. I mean, I had a conversation with Tim Gabbett, the researcher who actually does research on the acute chronic work ratio, who said that I shouldn't be using it to dictate the weight on the bar. And in my head, I was like, no shit. Like, I literally have been doing this without even realizing it because, you know, I think at the time I was too smart for my own good, right? Like, I was starting to really understand this stuff, and I know this stuff. This all makes sense to me. I understand the science. I'm using science to dictate my decisions. But yeah, what do we really know when it comes down to this stuff? Not that much. So I was like, fuck this. Without even telling the lifters, I was like, I'm ditching the intensity intervals. I'm just going to tell them what weight to put on the bar, and we're going to go from there. So when I was coming up with this idea, I was trying to think, if I want to lift heavy more often, what could actually work against me here? Like, what are the dangers of lifting heavy more often? So one of the things that, you know, came to mind was injury risk. You know, lifting heavy has higher rates of injury. All right. I understand people see that, but you'll never convince me that if an athlete is prepared to handle a given load, that load is inherently dangerous. I think the weight room sees far lower injuries than other sports in general. If we build up appropriately, and like, this is why I think having those baseline volumes and average intensities and keeping track of all this stuff is important, because it allows me to make decisions based off of what I feel the athlete is prepared to handle. You know, if I have a female lifter whose best squat's 280, I'm not going to have her take 315 for a triple. You know, when she's never even touched 300 for a single. So like, we'll gradually build up there. And in some cases it can be linear. In other cases, it's stretched out over a longer period of time. For someone like Kelly, her best squat's 225. However, we hit it for a single, then we hit it for doubles, then we've hit it for triples, then we've hit it for triples as a second squat on a given day. Like, there's, you know, you pick and choose what you want to actually do with the weights and what you're preparing them to do. So the fact that she can triple 225, I know she can single something a little bit heavier and be prepared to handle it, especially tripling 225 after doing some decent volume ahead of time. Like, we're building baselines up so that over time she can handle higher volumes of heavier weights. I wouldn't have had her triple 225 the first time that she would have touched it, because, you know, I think, one, we're starting to get into loads that she just hasn't been accustomed to, and psychologically it can be a little bit higher stress in that situation. But, you know, over time, as long as we continue to build it up, I mean, we've seen the same thing, like using Vicky's deadlift. Like, she doubled 300 one time, then she doubled, then she tripled 300, then we took 315 for a pause triple. Like, we were building, and finally she took 315 for four with bands. Like, it's building up over time, and the variations, I think, kind of play into this too. It kind of guides her along the way to being able to tolerate heavier loads and stuff like that, and build confidence and gain some momentum and all of that stuff. But I do not think that lifting heavy is inherently dangerous. People will talk about technique breaking down as being dangerous. Again, I don't think technique breaking down is dangerous. I think it still comes down to the athlete's ability to tolerate load. If they're lifting in shitty positions all of the time, so let's say, you know, the legs straighten and back rounds off the floor of the deadlift way before that bar even breaks the floor, that athlete's probably not capable of tolerating the same loads as somebody with a well-executed sumo deadlift. So some of these things need to be taken into consideration. In a lot of cases, if it's a beginner, I don't care how much they've pulled, we'll go back to pulling 185 with good technique, and we'll build it up from there, because over the long term you're going to be much better off, because I can't push volumes if you're in that shitty of a position. So there will be a building up process with that whole thing. When we, you know, go further down into it, I don't see that there's any risk. Now, what's the drawback of lifting heavy? Like what we hear about all the time is with recovery. You know, I've participated in sports my entire life. And in a lot of these cases, I'm playing multiple games a week, definitely doing some more higher intense stuff than I think lifting is having me do. But lifting heavy, when I actually like think about it, you know, I'm unsure of any answer. And I think, you know, in some cases I tend to not put a lot of stuff out there because I'm not 100% sure on where I stand on things. I just kind of sometimes just go with the flow of what I see in training. But I'm not too sure how big that recovery cost actually is. Do you feel a little more beat up, you know, mentally maybe, after lifting heavy? Yeah, I think so. But like, is it anything more than like you can't recover from in another day? Like, you know, in my head, maybe it adds 24 hours to the recovery process. You know, it's hard. It's impossible to track, right? Regardless, impossible to track. But I think we get these dogmas stuck in our head, and you know, it kind of doesn't allow us to adapt to, you know, what we're actually seeing as coaches. You know, and I think, you know, for a long time, so, and even up to this point, I'm kind of conflicted about this, but I have been organizing my weeks with high, medium, and low stress training days. You know, the high stress training days are the ones that, you know, we'll push stuff and like, basically they're the ones there to get adaptation. The medium stress days are there to kind of maintain, and the low stress days are there for, you know, more for recovery than anything else. I think the problem with this is, you know, I'm setting up my week without really using information. I'm just kind of randomly selecting when and where I'm going to put these days in. So I think, you know, even then I'm allowing these old dogmas to kind of dictate my behaviors as a coach. And again, I didn't have a good reason why, other than like, this is what I believe, this is what I was told, I've seen it work. But I've also seen it not work. So one of my lifters, Ryan, we've been pushing it since October, like literally since Nationals, just like every day, 1 to 2 hard sets, 8.5 to 9.5-ish. You know, don't miss reps. I really don't want it to be like grindy as fuck. But I want it to be hard, and 1 to 2 hard sets per lift per day. And let's just do it as long as we can. And then, you know, if we hit a wall, we'll change things up. Or if we, you know, stop seeing performance increase, we'll change things up. If you feel banged up, basically all I've been doing is just let's repeat the previous week. We'll cut some reps off of the top sets and run the numbers. So basically just lowering the RPE, go through the motions, kind of like a little deload. We'll assess and we'll move forward from there. So day one, hit the numbers, take what's there the following week, and then we're right back at it again. And he had hit 440 on the platform at Nationals. He had hit 465 in the gym before Nationals. So there was a big gap there. So since October, he's now squatted 500. Literally last week, he took 6 triples at 425 pounds. So even percentage off of that 500, you know, that's a volume PR right there. And it wasn't that hard. It was just kind of a day he ran the numbers. But he's consistently touching four plates. We definitely weren't doing that before Nationals. His deadlift has gone from 585 to 600. He's been doubling his best bench and hitting it a lot more consistently. Like, we're just starting to get some more consistent progress. It really just hasn't shown any signs of slowing down. Sorry for the pause. I'm trying to like gain my thoughts and to make it make more sense and stuff with what we've been doing. But, you know, I've kind of, as a coach, I just kind of said, fuck it. I'm going to embrace the uncertainty that we really don't know a lot of things, and that the only gauge of how well we're doing as a lifter, how well we're doing as a coach, is the performance of the lifter. So just using that a lot more to kind of dictate my behaviors and, you know, just kind of limit things to what I know and what I don't know and make better decisions off of that. Some of the things that we do know, I wholeheartedly believe that confidence in the athlete's emotions play a huge role in their success. Their perceptions and beliefs about training definitely play a role. Like, I've seen these things in action. So when I started to like put all the dots together and be like, all right, here's what we know. All of these, the crazy thing is like, when I started looking at it, strength is a skill. You know, and like, what do we know about skills training? So all I knew is kind of what, you know, I learned from my time under Chico. I've read things. And you know, I really didn't know much. Like, when you know, let's use an example. So, you know, I would say this a lot, that if we're performing 15 reps and all 15 reps look different, where training an unstable movement pattern, we want all 15 to look the same so that we can train a stable movement pattern. I hadn't seen this to be true. I've watched people, lifters, train with light weights, and then the second the weights get heavier, I've just seen it go to complete and utter shit. And in some cases, I think they're just not prepared to handle the heavier loads, for sure. In other cases, I think it's psychological. And the combination of the two, and you absolutely do not know which one it is, because you can't separate the body from the mind. So I started to dive more into understanding skills and skills training, and decided that I'm going to treat strength as a skill. I'm going to look at the person in front of me, take, you know, we know that certain volumes have to be met, the overload principle exists, all these things. However, you know, the more I learned while reading and researching skills development, was every person, they have a current stable movement pattern. If that stable movement pattern is shitty technique, we need to find a way to destabilize that movement pattern and stabilize it with a new one. And one of the only ways in which I thought that we could destabilize a movement pattern is actually removing it. It's the only thing that made sense, and it was recommended. One of the examples that I read in the research was a tennis player who has poor technique with a two-hand backhand. You can make them hold something in one of their hands so that it completely takes that two-handed backhand stroke out of their repertoire, and you build it up in other ways. So for me, I was trying to compare this to powerlifting, and it's like, all right, so maybe if I remove the comp lift for a period of time, I can take the variations that I think will help guide them in the right way and use those to kind of build the path to allow them to find that technique that I want them to find. So in some cases, I have people who pull conventional, who when they pull conventional off the floor, it was kind of the technique thing I was talking about before. The knees would straighten and the back would round before the bar would break the floor, which put the load primarily on the back muscles. And we'll be able to tolerate higher volumes and we'll have a higher ceiling of weight lifted if we can get more legs involved. So in my head, how can I find a way to discourage them from using more back and to get them to get their legs and hips more involved in the deadlift? So, you know, in the past, I've used special exercises that I learned from Shiko to fix these, like a deadlift plus deadlift below the knees was one of them. The problem with this is I can't load it the same way, and we're still kind of in the same positions, and sometimes those lifts off the floor still look just as bad, and it's not really like I need to find a way. So when we move, from my understanding of it, we perceive a movement before we actually do it. And upon perceiving this movement, we kind of predict sensory feedback and we pre-plan a motor strategy to perform the task. And as we move and go through it, it adds those movements to our perceptions. So logically, if I remove the movement that has a stable pattern in a poor position, I can alter that perception by putting them in a position that punishes that from happening. So like in a wide stance sumo deadlift, if their hips rise and their back rounds, they won't be able to move the weight. So in order for them to actually complete the task, they have to do it differently. And in doing this, so if I remove the conventional deadlift and I add in a wide stance sumo deadlift, all of a sudden now I'm adding to that perception, that pre-planned perception of movement, those predictive processes that if I do what I was doing before, I fail. And there's nothing that reinforces the negative, we'll call it negative behavior, that negative behavior that they were performing before. It's just wide stance deadlifts. You're going to be in this position until it looks better. And then let's build it up. We can use the squat and to kind of maintain strength in those other muscles and those angles while we kind of work on this deadlift, because in a lot of cases that deadlift goes backwards quite a bit when you take somebody who pulls conventional like that and make them pull wide stance sumo deadlifts. So we did this and I bring the conventional back in, and then all of a sudden the weight is just flying. I had people literally take openers from meets that weren't too long ago for sets of 4 and 5. It surprised me because I decided to try something that went against like my inner beliefs with how I thought technique and training technique works with the lifts. So then I started trying this with more people and more people, and we've done it with the squat, the bench, the deadlift, and across the board. So since the meets in October and November, I've had about around 30 people doing this, and people have touched 100% or hit all-time PRs for reps, not even just singles. 22 of them have done that, which is insane to think. I'm sorry, not 100%. Taking 90% for 3 or more reps, 100% for 1 to 2 reps of multiple sets, or all-time PRs for 1 or even multiple reps. And these are lifters of all skill levels too. So the fact that that many of them have hit that many PRs, it's insane to me. And some of the other ones like were... we were kind of working on things, so we haven't even got to the point of actually increasing loads up to those numbers. So it'll be interesting once we start building up to that, if that happens with them. So I start to embrace the uncertainty of things and just treat everything as if it were a skill. And this includes strength. So I used to look at strength as we apply a mechanical stress. There's a level of mechanical stress that everybody is accustomed to. We give them mechanical stress that's more than that. We let that stress dissipate and we should see results. However, like I said, it was inconsistent. Since I've been doing it this way, it's been way more consistent with results across the board. And whether this is psychological, whether this is, mechanical in nature, it's definitely both, and you can't separate one and have one without the other. So, so looking at like the whole person, just allowing the results to kind of dictate where we go on a certain day, it's working a lot better. And I think, you know, this gets back to a few things. So let's bring this full circle here. So I was talking about volume, right? We know that a certain level needs to be met. So using the acute chronic work ratio, I make sure our baseline volume at least stays the same. So we're not just decreasing volume. So, you know, I want that athlete to be prepared to handle workloads in case that's the direction we take things, if I want to push volumes a little bit. But like I said, we don't know what's optimal and what's not. So getting those 1 to 2 hard sets, I actually think ensures that we get a training stimulus. So if I'm missing the mark on volumes, at least the intensity is there to make sure we're getting some a higher training stimulus. Or even just a minimum training stimulus from that perspective. I was, before scheduling the days with high, medium, and low stress days. You know, and again, this was randomly assigned based off of guesses. So I took the guesswork out of that. I put what I think is appropriate on the sheet of paper, and same thing. So if it's a low stress day, but that athlete doesn't need a recovery day, they can push those weights. And we're making sure we're still getting a training stimulus on a day that necessarily wasn't there. And if an athlete needs a break, we put it in. You know, I think before too, you know, I would trying to think of the best way to word this. I guess before, when I would use variations, I would just leave them in for a pre-scheduled amount of time. And just take them out because we need to change things up. It's time. It's been 3-4 weeks. We need to do that. I think now I'm a little bit more allowing progress to dictate when I do that. So if we're using a variation and an athlete's building it, I'll keep it in there and I'll kind of almost treat it like a comp lift. So maybe we start with the wide stance sumo deadlifts and you're starting to see progress slow down a little bit. We'll do wide stance sumo deadlifts with a pause 2 inches off the floor. We'll add bands or chains to it. We'll do a deadlift plus deadlift below the knees in that position. High bar wide stance squats. Once that starts fizzling out a little bit, you're seeing progress stall, let's add a pause halfway up to it. Let's add chains to it. Let's, you know, based off of the actual weaknesses of the lifter and what I'm seeing within those lifts. All right, the high bar wide stance squat, it's the progress is stalling because their knees are still collapsing in too much. Well, let's do some tempo. Let's slow them down. Let's get that stronger and let's build that up. Then let's go back to the high bar wide stance squats. Let's push that again. You know, and I'm kind of letting what I see in training dictate my decisions a lot more than I was in the past. And I've seen much better results than this, than what doing this than I have in the past. It's literally, it's been amazing to me to watch. Like, it shattered most of the truths that I've believed to be true my entire coaching career. And saying some of those things, you know, I think a lot of people are going to be like, you're nuts. But this is what I've seen. These are the results I'm getting when I stop following it so much. And just like, you know, I think I was too entrenched to a lot of beliefs that I had that just weren't true. You know, or they are true, but they're only partially true because, you know, we're not taking into account all of the variables that go into this stuff. And like, since I've been embracing the uncertainty of training a lot more and just, you know, here's what I know, here's what I don't know, here's what my gut is telling me to actually do, we're starting to see a lot better results from it. And I think as I learn more about being able to manipulate these constraints, because that's what it is, right? So I'm using a constraints-led approach. That's what altering the environment to destabilize those poor movement patterns, to stabilize new ones. And what we see break down under heavier weights, I treat as such. It's a skill. It's a skill to lift heavy. Why is it breaking down? What positions can I use to make that better? And you'll be surprised at how much that stuff actually fluctuates around. So let's strengthen that piece. Then something else will come up. Then we'll add stuff and we'll strengthen that again. And just, you know, kind of allow training. This was another quote I really liked, that Mike Teixeira had said on the podcast, is it's about the process, not the program. So allowing the process to kind of just take shape and make decisions based off of that. And maybe, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you can't really get anything moving, right? Then maybe we add more volume or higher intensity, average relative intensity. Like we use some of those to our advantage. I think there's, you know, just embracing the uncertainty of things. Like I said, you know, before meets, I used to, you know, drop variations out. We'd get more specific, but I'm not so sure that the principle of specificity actually makes sense. The amount of success I've had in fixing technique from actually removing the lift and doing lifts that are similar, sumo deadlift and a conventional deadlift are still deadlifts. You're just changing angles of it a little bit, but it's not specific to them pulling conventional and to see the technique, the transfer from the skill that they were learning as sumo transfer to conventional. I don't think the law of specificity, as everybody believes it to be true, is actually true. So, you know, as I understand more about this stuff and I'm able to have a greater understanding of how to use these constraints to my favor, and to help guide the athlete to better positions and increasing strength and all of that stuff, I think, you know, we're going to continue to see even better success than we've already been seeing here, because, you know, I think my understanding of this stuff is still in its infancy. I just think this time around I'm a lot more open to understanding that I don't know everything, so let's just kind of go with the flow and see how it runs. For now, I'm going to wrap this podcast up here. I hope what I said makes sense, or even if it doesn't, I hope it poses a lot of questions for other coaches, and feel free to reach out. I may not have the answers, but I can give you kind of what I've seen. I love having conversations about this stuff. You can follow what our team's doing on Instagram, Precision Powerlifting Systems. I share other stuff on my personal account about this. It's KWCan. Stay strong, Boston.